Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rouser and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's Tornado, San Diego.
And we have a very special show tonight. We have a four-time world champion, according to the article I read that was previewing our show tonight, Michael Moore, three-time world heavyweight champ and one-time light heavyweight champ. Right, Tony?
Yes, you are correct. I was like, I don't remember him winning a heavyweight title four times, but you're right, there was a WBO world heavyweight title that was in there.
So,
I can really like that if I don't know Freddie Hernandez on that fight.
Freddie Hernandez, what about him?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up.
Oh.
I remember the fight. I forget the fighter's name.
Well, we have Michael on at 9:15 coming on. And Tom should be popping in any second now. So he waits, I think, till he hears some commentary. There he is. Tom, Psychic Tom is with us.
That's it. On the job.
And actually, Psychic Tom told me a little story online a couple of days ago, I think now, about how he met a boxer on the Psychic Hotline. Want to tell that story, Tom?
Well, typical call, wasn't expecting anything different. And we would always ask the caller's first name. We wouldn't get into last names. And it was the most unusual first name, Iran. Okay. And then the date of birth, 1960. I can't remember the exact days, but so as I put, and then we would ask where they're calling from, and he said New York, Bronx. And I said, uh-huh. So my psychic antenna was up. So I said, hold on. Yeah, I'm getting a strong feeling. Sports. You're a athlete, I bet. Hold on. Like aggressive sports. I'm seeing a ring. Glove boxing. Yeah. And so in the meantime, he's speechless. I mean, he's mad. He's just sure good. Then I just had to burst out laughing and tell him, hey, just, you know, I've been a fan for a long time. So we got into a discussion about his career because most of the time on the psychic line, it was frustrated women wondering when their boyfriend was coming back. But in this case, he was asking about his career prospects. And this was, like I said, 95, 96, just around that time. So he, you know, you guys know the fights that guy had. I mean, he'd been through some wars. I mean, wars. And I know he was, shall we say, a bit shop one by then. But who am I to give a former world champion advice? And so I just, in essence, told him that, hey, you've been around, you know how to train smart, you know how to fight smart, and, you know, you had all this negativity on the way up of people who told you you couldn't make it, and you've got naysayers now that are going to tell you what you can't do, but it's up to you. Get into training and just see where things go. And he did have, the problem was he was competing as a heavyweight by then. And, you know, when you start off as middleweight and get to heavyweight later in your career, that's usually not a good blueprint for success. But he did score a knockout against another former champ that was coming back, Harry Coetzee. Blast from the past there, the late 70s, early 80s. So there we go. You never know what's going to happen when the phone rings, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, we got the correct number for Michael Moore tonight.
Cool.
Last week, we had a female answer the phone and said, I don't know who you're talking about. This is not Michael Moore. So apparently they gave us the wrong number. So now we're 1 week off our 3 weeks in a row of boxing guests. So it's going to be Ray Mercer next week. And actually, I think they skipped a week on us, too. I think we're not going to have Bobby Chiz until the 20th of September. So that's the schedule. And Michael Moore, if somebody that I definitely watched coming up. And if I wasn't such a big fan of both guys, you know, I probably would have been a little bit more ticked off to see George Foreman knock him out there and get the title. But that was one of the fights that stands out because I was a really huge fan of George. But I had seen Michael come up and, you know, watch his knockout streak over the years. And I actually remember seeing the very first fight. I can't remember exactly who it was against, but I know I saw the very first fight that he actually went to a decision. And the guy was really tall, if I remember correctly. And just used his reach and his jab through the whole fight to win. But, you know, he was, I think he was better than Tyson as far as consecutive knockouts, wasn't he? Tony? Can you weigh in on that one, Rain Man? Hello? Tony?
You know, Rich, what I found interesting about Michael's career is the fact that he jumped right from light heavy straight to heavyweight, kind of just leapfrogged right over the cruiserweight division. So I'd like to hopefully get the chance to ask him about that, you know. Just,
right.
You know, because a lot of times, you know, you see people not jump two divisions, especially when it's, you know, kind of a considerable jump. As opposed to like Roberto Duran going from lightweight, you know, he skipped over junior welterweight, went right to 147, but that's still 12 pounds. I mean, I know it's all relative, but still, found that just kind of interesting. So I'd be like to get his perspective on that.
Definitely. And it's all for the Find a Dream Foundation too, so we'll definitely ask about that. So. Pretty good charity. Remus is involved as well, and Bobby Chiz. So,
and I also have to ask him whether he'll answer or not. I don't know, but you know, it seems like he had quite a volatile relationship with Teddy Atlas, or a very interesting relationship with him. You know, so that's. See if we can get a few comments about that. You know, because I remember when Michael was on Friday Night Fights, and Teddy was, you know, he was very impartial. But he did say afterwards, of course, there's a bit of emotion involved. I wouldn't be human if there weren't. But I thought he did a pretty good job on it. They had a good interview afterwards. But obviously, they must have had some differences. But, yeah, that's right. The kind of thing, it's kind of touchy to ask someone. I mean, I don't, maybe it's the kind of thing he doesn't want to talk about publicly, you know. So just kind of play it by ear, maybe. But I'll never forget that motivational speech. Between rounds when, you know, in the Holyfield fight. And I'm sure you remember that one.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, the other news, of course, is MMA, UFC. You know, this whole UFC 151 cancellation has produced more and more news with each passing day, it seems.
Yeah, exactly. I was reviewing some things today, too, and it's almost like, my God, where do we begin?
Hello, and thank you for calling back.
I don't know what that was. Looks like we lost Tony, though. Whoops. Are you still on, Tom?
I'm here, yeah. And I was noticing one of the headlines, Dan Henderson denies informing Chael Sonnen of injury. And return. You know, when these things happen, the rumor mill gets started. And you know how that game goes. Someone tells someone something, and then they tell someone else, and the version is a little different. And by the time it gets to the 10th person, we have a whole different story. But Henderson was directly quoted as saying that he couldn't understand why John Jones refused to fight with Chael. and he didn't come out and say that he felt Chael didn't have it.
I think that's Tony. There he is.
All right. But he didn't come out and say that Chael had no chance in the fight, but he just felt that since Chael hadn't been training, that it would have been an uphill battle. And like Dan said, when you're the champ, you fight anyone. You know, Dan was just, he kind of gave an old school answer about it. But it just seems like the news is just not stopping there as far as, you know, how is Jones going to get his fan base back, and should he stop being John Jones, Inc. and go back to John Jones the Fighter? And it's just fascinating to see this. It's almost too much to keep up with. But.
Yeah, and now I guess he's fighting Belfort. I don't remember the date exactly off the top of my head, but...
September 22nd. Yeah.
September 22nd, okay. So we went through a real musical chairs scenario here. We had Lyoto Machida got a shot at it. He said no. He wanted to do a full training camp. Chael Sonnen got a shot at it. I guess Greg Jackson's camp is the one that took responsibility for making that decision for Jones, even though Jones apologized on Twitter for, how they had to handle it. The guy basically didn't want to go and fight a guy like Chael Sonnen with no training camp specifically for him, you know, or not off time, anyway. So he said Greg Jackson apparently told him that it would be the biggest mistake of his life if he did that. So then, everybody criticized him, and then all these other guys got an opportunity, and they said no, too. So it's like, you know, yeah, obviously everybody's young. And, John Jones isn't the only one that's going to turn down a fight if it doesn't suit his needs and give him the optimal position to win. So obviously they had to make some changes there. And I think now it's definitely on. I guess I forget who it was. I think it was somebody I was kind of making fun of Belfort for not showing up for fights. Saying, I think it was Chael saying he'll probably end up fighting me anyway because Belfort doesn't like to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Something to that effect. But it's definitely throwing a wrench into everything.
Oh, yeah. And the opening odds, I believe that Jones was -1300. So I guess what that means in betting terms, you want to make $100, you put up 1,300. I mean, this is just off the charts, and I think that Vitor was +900. So you want to make 900, you put up 100. So apparently there's not going to be much betting action in this one. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens as we go forward, but Vitor has been so streaky in his career. You remember back in 97, how, you know, when he first came along, the Phenom days, and how things have changed. So see what happens.
Right.
I mean, I like to think he has a puncher's chance, but my crystal ball is not telling me that.
Another UFC story, quick one here. Ultimate Fighting Championship featherweight Chad Mendes is now facing misdemeanor battery charges after an altercation at a bar last month in Hanford, California. I think we talked about this, or he was alleged to sucker punch somebody. Mendes was shocked and surprised by the allegations, which first hit the airwaves earlier this month, and contends that the majority of the facts pertaining to him in the story are absolutely false. The original story in the Hartford Sentinel about Mendes was overblown and inaccurate, I guess. He says he never punched anyone, ran, or evaded police. a bar patron started in with Mendez. He slapped the patron, no injury or knockdown, and all of it was on videotape. That's why he was charged with simple misdemeanor, not felony. Sensationalism can damage careers. So it, I guess it was not a fireable offense, I guess. It's just a smack and a smack back, sounds like. And I don't know, maybe there'll be a civil case out of it, but it doesn't sound like he's going to be doing any major time over this one. But, you know, usually if it was something really serious, you know, like Ocho Cinco, you'd fire him.
Well, I think there's an old cliche that it's very difficult to win a street fight. Even if you win it, you're probably going to lose something. And I think that's exponentially true for a professional fighter. You know, you got to be scratching your head saying, where are we going here? You know, some drunk in a bar? Come on. Of course, I wasn't there. To be fair, I don't know. And maybe we'll have him on as a guest someday and we can ask him.
Well, here's some boxing news. Over in Kreuzberg, Germany, we had Arthur Abraham. He's got another belt. Arthur Abraham beat Robert Stieglitz by unanimous decision for the the super middleweight title. I'm trying to find out which organization. I can't find it here. But anyway, he's got a new belt, so take that. He's a WBO super middleweight title, and Stieglitz is 42-3. Going into the fight with 23 knockouts. So definitely a tough opponent there. Also in Germany, we had Robin Krasniqi knocked out Sadir Sahin, and Jack Coquet TKO'd Frederick Serre. It all went according to plan, I guess, on the undercard there. Let's see what else we got. Big boxing updates. I don't know if we mentioned Slatoa didn't fare too well in his last fight. He had a big fight. He lost. I forget what the outcome was exactly. But he had another tough loss. Gato Figueroa?
Yeah. Lost a decision, I believe it was. I saw the information on Facebook. I obviously did not see the fight. He was a good interview. Unfortunately, shortly after we spoke to him, he ran into the right hand of Randall Bailey on ESPN2 Friday Night Fights a couple years ago. I think it was like 2009 or 2010. And Bailey literally lifted him off his feet. No shame in that, as Bailey's done that to a lot of guys, most recently filling up his own Mike Jones. And I just wanted to share this with you. I think you might get, interesting info out of this. You know, I was looking at my local Philadelphia paper yesterday, and Mike Jones, since that loss to Randall Bailey on the Pacquiao-Bradley undercard, basically, he has been nowhere to be found. He hasn't spoken with his trainers or managers since the fight. And, they're trying to set up a fight for him, and it's like, but he hasn't been training. Now, there's been some rumors that he went out to Vegas and was training with Roger Mayweather, but that has not been validated. That was just what the article said. And like I said, very unfortunate. Mike Jones, a very good fighter, very talented fighter. I've been watching him since he was fighting six-rounders in Philadelphia. And, that fight against Bailey, he looked uncomfortable from the start. And then when he finally started getting into his groove, and I heard the announcer saying, if Jones keeps this up, there's a good chance he's going to stop him. And like 5 seconds later, he gets clocked and it's over.
Well, are you very aware of any big boxing matches coming up this weekend? I know that Dawson versus Ward's coming up mighty soon. I think that's next weekend, all right.
Well, the next few weekends. This weekend, I got so many things going on next weekend that I haven't even, you know, had time to really even think. I've been working out a lot. I had my friend over Monday and Wednesday this week, giving him some work. And then last night, a group of us, we all went to dinner. He was the only guy that couldn't make it because he was working. And then his cousin, who I've known since we were little kids, he started getting all fired up. And now they want to spar each other. And I got to referee it. And then his cousin had a few drinks in him. And I was, like, showing him some of the moves that his cousin's been doing. And next thing I know, I'm just holding my hands up. And he's firing him. I'm like, yo, buddy, your knuckles are bony as shit, and I ain't got no mitts on. He goes, can you calm down a little bit here? Oh, sorry, man, sorry. So we went to dinner last night. We were talking. We were bullshitting. Tomorrow night we're going over to his house, and Saturday morning we leave for Atlantic City, bachelor party weekend. Yeah, it's going to be like the Hangover all over again, Rich, and get this. I got the best. You've seen the Hangover, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Tom, have you seen it?
Hard to miss it.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you go back to the original, I assigned us all roles from the movie. The groom, he's going to be Doug. We're going to get him drunk. We're going to lose him. The one guy that I'm training, and he's mad because he doesn't want to be stupid. But I'm like, dude, you live the nerdy lifestyle, and your wife slaps you around. You know, you're still. I get to be Tyson.
Nice.
So the one guy that, you know, one of our friends is kind of fat, you know, runs his mouth a little bit. I said, yeah, I'm going to punch you right in the face. He says, I'm allowed because that's my role. He's another guy I grew up with.
I like that. You're going to be the featured guest. I was going to do this story last week, but I kind of left it off. I guess he's going to be the featured guest at some Japanese investors conference.
No,
so,
sure.
He's definitely getting around.
Well, so what happened to him over in Tokyo? I didn't think he was in Japan again.
I don't know. Apparently, Holyfield and him have been joking, you know, a lot lately, too. That was another thing in the news the other day. You know, they still joke about the ear biting thing.
I did hear that. You know, they've made it and they do have, you know, some fun with it now. And that's good, you know. It's been, what, 15 years now to let bygones be bygones, and
We'll see when Holyfield shows up at this Brockton Rocky Marciano deal. I'll see if he'll sign the same glove that Mike Tyson signed, and then we'll know that the rivalry is over.
Yeah, there you go. I don't think we really got anything major going on this weekend. Like I said, I haven't even looked because I already have my weekend set. But I'm looking forward to the next 2 weekends. You know, we got fights on the 8th and fights on the 15th. On the 8th, we got Dawson versus Ward. I probably won't be able to see that live because they're throwing me a birthday party down at Philly Stadium. And then the following week, you know, we got dual cards, HBO and Showtime. You know, we got the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. versus Sergio Martinez and the Canelo Alvarez. Of course, I'm brain freezing on the guy's name. Lopez, I believe, the guy that just beat Victor Ortiz.
Josecito Lopez?
Yeah. I knew it was Lopez. By the way, it was Freddie Delgado that might have won that one round. That wasn't... You gotta give me credit. I remember the guy. Almost remember his name.
Well, UFC. We don't have another UFC until September 22nd. I know Strikeforce. Anyway, let's see if we got any other fights in MMA we can talk about. Yeah, that cancellation really hit him. We had a tough time because they had enough to distract people.
You know, apparently it's been a slow news week in spite of that. because apparently Dana put out a question about who wants to see Brock Lesnar versus Fedor. And
yeah.
he had to be joking, I think, because I from what I've been able to find on, you know, what I've read, his last meeting with Brock didn't go too well. And he's never been able to get together with Fedor. But apparently the rumor spread that, oh, yeah, it's on, it's definitely on. And apparently there's still quite a market to see that fight. You never know, huh?
Okay, back again. Can you hear me, Tony?
Yeah,
did
you call up on me?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to open the window for upcoming MMA fights and jammed everything.
Oh, nice.
But gave me some opportunity to eat some more venison, so.
Dude. You know what? You're a venison fan?
Yeah, I just, this morning I woke up, well, I didn't really wake up because I pulled an all-nighter, and I had to work in the morning, doing some lumberjacking, so, my buddy was coming by with the sauce, he had been using one of the sauce, so he stops by and he goes, you gotta see what I got in here, and he pulls out this little dough. Dough, but it had a lot of meat on it, and I guess he was driving to work, and it was just right there on the side of the road, fresh kill, you know, blood was still wet, so I had never cleaned a deer before, but we strapped it to the tree, and cleaned it up, and cooked some for dinner tonight.
Nice. Well, I've been hunting since I've been 12, so I've been doing a long time, big time venison fan, both my father and I. And he's got some amazing recipes. He finds them any way he can. He'll experiment with them. And he's an Italian. You know, we often cook. You know, Apollo Creed even said it. And a couple of years ago, it was Super Bowl Sunday, and we were bored. The game sucked. And I had made this venison chili cheese dip. Unbelievable. I mean, unfreaking believable. The game sucked. Sucking. So we're all, like, not even paying attention. We're playing pool. And we had the dip set up on a low table, and there goes my good friend Vinny walking by, my dog. He looks at the dip, and I look over the corner of my eye, I'm watching him, and he looks back at all of us, and we're all playing pool. He sticks his head in the dip bowl. and then I went over to get my camera, and he saw me, you know, he like panicking, like right away, I'm like, no, you can go back and finish the job now, because ain't none of us going to be anymore.
Right.
When Vinny was a puppy, he was like about maybe 8.5 weeks old, and I was up the mountains that year. I shot a 10-pointer, shot a huge 10-pointer, so you know, pretty widespread on it. And I have a picture of holding this 8-week-old puppy inside the deer's rack.
Yeah, this was.
And now it's amazing because the dog is bigger than a horse.
This was no hunt.
Get there, and I called, you know, the police, and I'm like, and I get the dispatcher on the phone. She was kind of rude. She's like, you know, whatever. And I'm like, oh, I hit a deer. Where is that? And I saw him traveling eastbound. Gave her the intersection, and then she was bitching about something else, whatever. And she was, and we'll have a state trooper there in a few minutes. Okay, thank you very much. And he'll arrange for removal of the animal. Well, I said, man, that won't be necessary. I said, we'll pay for dinner. May I ask for what? I said, dinner, ma'am. You can take that up to the office and let me get there. So the officer showed up. got out of the car, put his, like, state trooper hat on. He goes, seems like you had some bad luck today. I'm like, yes, I did, sir. He's like, would you like that deer? I said, yes, I would, sir. He was like, my daddy, he goes, run to the back of that car and get us the hell out of here. What the hell? They don't want to clean it up.
Yeah. This one doesn't even require anything. Okay. I mean, it's only bleeding from the mouth, so.
We were going to say, and I'm going back. I was, Rich, it was actually a few months before the 98 Nationals. So this is how far back we're going. We had just broken for the semester. I had beaten Willie Taylor down at the Richmond Men's Club just a few weeks prior. And, you know, we're home for the semester, and we're having a Christmas dinner. My family was over, right over on the western part of New Jersey. It was about like a 45, 50-minute ride for us. We're driving. I'm in the passenger seat, conked out, like drinking the night before. And my dad goes, oh, my God, that deer's coming out of the street. Well, this nice buck runs out. We all look in our rearview mirror, and a woman hit it. My dad pulls over to the side of the road and throws it in reverse and backs up about, a good 100 yards. And the woman's shaking. He goes, ma'am, are you okay? She goes, I'm okay. I've got to compose myself, but I'll be okay. Ma'am, do you want that beer? She's like, no, I don't want that beer. He goes, well, we'll take it from you. We totally ditch the woman, throw the beer in the car. Now, we go to this Christmas function. Everybody there is either in shirts and ties or in, you know, nice sweaters and stuff like this. But all these guys hunt, and a lot of these guys, you know, I'm not a guy very good at, like, dressing out of deer, you know, just because I don't have, like, those surgeon-type hands, and sometimes I get a little impatient.
I did a pretty robot this morning.
You see about eight guys all start rolling up their sleeves and pushed each other out of the way for the chance to do the job. I just sat back and watched. I was like, yeah, this is kind of sweet, you know? I'll have to send you some of my recipes. I'll send you that venison chili cheese dip, and I will send you a chili recipe. A venison chili recipe.
We have fresh rosemary in the garden here. I know.
Yeah. I'll send you that, and I'll send you a venison chili recipe. It'll probably knock you on your ass.
Even with some teriyaki marinade stuff with peanuts on it, you could still... still appreciate the rosemary taste of it. Definitely good. But we're gonna have to come up with multiple ways to cook it because I got so much that by the time I finish it, I'm gonna be sick of venison. But that is pretty damn good. But anyway, we were talking before we got rudely booted off by my frozen computer. We were talking about Fedor Emelianenko and Brock Lesnar being tossed around by Dana White. I was just like, yeah, it's definitely something in the punch bowl.
How do you spell spectacle?
Yeah. Man, it's not going to happen, you know. And for White to mention the possibility, I mean, neither guy is coming back to the UFC. And, you know, I guess they would have to throw some really big numbers at him to get him to do it. But if they're talking about it, usually there is some truth to it that it could be possible. So, you know, if anybody could work it out, I guess they could. I mean, these are the same guys who paid James Toney $500,000 to go against Randy Couture. Or I think it was $400,000. Anyway. And he had his pay docked before the fight. Some other deal. I remember that one. But anyway, yeah, we'll see if anything materializes out of that. I doubt it will, but it's just
but it's fascinating that there's such fan interest in that fight.
It's pretty much invented online too. You know, it's like
right.
The whole thing that Fedor is this legend, and that you know he could beat anybody. He's got a puncher's chance. You know, it's old news. I mean, he's not that type of guy anymore. And he's already said he's going to retire. And I know he kind of left it up in the air, saying if the money's right, then he would fight Lesnar. But Lesnar has no incentive. And I think he could beat Fedor, but really, what is his incentive to come back for one fight when he's, you know, got this WWE thing and he doesn't even have to take real punches? So.
Yeah, and I would have to think he's making a lot more in the WWE than he would coming back for the real thing. But I just find it so fascinating that, old legends, you know, it's still, you know, the fans just have that emotional attachment to it. And hey, and I have to confess, I would watch. I would. You know, if it's on, I would be watching. I mean, maybe more for just the kind of like you look at car wrecks and stuff, but I just can't see it happening. But like I said, all this interest was generated at a purely grassroots level as soon as Dana put it out. And knowing him, I don't know, I mean, how serious he was about it. But it just seemed like it took on a life of its own, and then the rumor was it was signed for one of these other events, not the UFC, but it was signed from another event outside of the UFC. Fascinating.
Well, we do have some MMA fights coming up. Might as well read them off since it crashed my computer trying to load it last time. We got King of the Cage tonight. Mercenaries from San Manuel Indian Bingo and Casino Hall out in Highland, California. And tomorrow night, or maybe tonight, I guess, over there for us, since it's in Denmark, we got Royal Arena 2 from Copenhagen. We got 1FC5 Pride of a Nation from the Philippines, Quezon City. And we got on the 31st of tomorrow, Crazy Bull, Cage Fight 2 in the Crazy Bull Cafe in Vicenza, Italy. So if you're in Italy this weekend, you want to see some MMA fights tomorrow night.
I'm visiting my motherland that night.
I'm
going to Jersey Shore. Isn't that close enough to Italy?
Yeah, I guess so, these days. at the Al Hussein Youth City Boxing Arena in Amman, Jordan, we have Fight Night 7 put on by CWFC. That's the first, I don't think I've ever seen a fight advertised over there. And, of course, we've got to have the Japanese in on this. Things here. We got a couple Japanese shows, but one of them is on September 1st here. We have Progress Tour 10, Pancras, another King of the Cage on September 1st. The one of a few events here in the United States at the Eastside Cannery Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, Future Legend 9. We got Valor Fight 2 on September 1st, Genesis from Tasmania, Australia. TFS Max Fight Gala 13 from Frankfurt, Germany. That's also on September 1st. Battle at Thunder in the Rockies, Thunder Mountain Harley Davidson in Loveland, Colorado. And let's see, I think we got one more here. Couple more. Hold on. Okay, we got the Gold's Gym South Tokyo Annex in Tokyo, Japan on September 2nd. We got SWAT GX10 also in Japan in Okinawa. We have Tenkaichi Super Fight 12 on September 2nd. Brazilian Fight League 15 from Paraná, Brazil on September 2nd. And finally, another one on September 2nd, Tough Enough, Festi Brawl 3, also from Las Vegas at the South Point Arena in Vegas. And if I was still out there, I'd probably be going to those. So there you have it. That's the upcoming MMA schedule for the week. We're about 5 minutes from hooking up with Michael Moore. I should probably bring up his Box Rec record so I know what I'm talking about when I'm talking to him. What are you looking forward to asking him, Tony?
Well, I actually had a friend of mine on Facebook when I posted that article you sent the other day. He wanted me to ask him, you know, just his opinions on some of the... You know, that being Emmanuel Stewart, who, you know, was starting his career up, fighting as a crown gem. Then he had that years of Teddy Atlas. And then for a while, he had been working, helping with Freddie Roach at the Wild Card Gym. So he wanted to ask, you know, me about his opinions on those, you know, gentlemen. And then I wondered on a personal level, of course, I want to talk about the 1992 fight with Bert Cooper, because it was the first fight I attended when I was a teenager. So and I remember talking to my friend Keith, and I was like, you know, here's me. I'm a 15-year-old kid. I want to start boxing, obviously, but I didn't know nothing really about it except for what I watched on TV. And just the atmosphere that night, Trump, Taj Mahal, and, you know, the undercard fights are okay. I mean, Gotti's on the undercard, which is kind of cool. But then when they came out and Moore and Cooper both got out there and with the electricity and Cooper got on them early and had them down in the first 30 seconds and it was wow. And the crowd was just so amped. I'm like, this is cool. So, of course, I want to talk about that. Then we got the fight with Holyfield, the fight with Foreman, which I'm sure has got to be one of his bigger disappointments. But yeah, a lot of stuff. This is about his career.
You know, according to BoxRec, anyway, his residence is in Monessen, Pennsylvania. You know where that is? M-O-N-E-N.
Any idea? I believe that is on the western part of the state. Yeah, I believe that's on the western part of the state.
Born in Brooklyn, New York. And, his record is 52 wins, 4 losses, 1 draw, 40 knockouts. One of those things that always impressed me about watching Michael Moore fight is his knockout ability, especially since he was typically a lot shorter than most of his opponents that I saw him in, anyway.
Yeah, because remember, he came up from light heavyweight when he did at light heavyweight. He was 100% on the you know, the knockout percentage. I'll never forget his fight with a guy by the name of Alex Stewart, and he fought Holyfield twice and fought Tyson. I remember, you know, he had Stewart down and Stewart was fighting back kind of hard. He hit him, I think it was with a right hook or an uppercut, and it sent Stewart down face first, and Stewart couldn't get his hands up in time, and his face literally skidded across the mat and split his eye open.
Yikes.
Yeah. I remember that. Part of my Rain Man ability, you know?
Well, the guy who I was talking about earlier, and I don't think I mentioned it on the last show, that I saw his first unanimous decision win, was a guy named Mike White. So.
And what was funny about that was mentioned this on Facebook, that I went to college with Keith, his brother was talking about that very fight. Mike the Giant White, who was like 6'10" or something or other, like
2 feet.
And it was the first fight Michael Moore went the distance. But if I remember correctly, I think Moore put him down with like 5 seconds to go in the last round, and the bell saved him from a knockout.
Yeah, that could have happened. That's not something that stands out. I just remember it was a tough fight because of the reach.
We're going to find out in a few minutes. I'm going to see if my memory holds up. My track record on here says it usually does, so we'll see.
Alright. I'm trying to add him right now. But, definitely looking forward to just talking to him about the heavyweight division and where have all the Americans gone?
Yeah, right.
I'm sure he's got some kind of perspective on that. He was in that era of, you know, dominant American heavyweight.
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Hello, Michael.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron from the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show here. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line and Psychic Tom Padgett.
Okay, good evening, Michael. Good evening, how are you?
good. So, what do you got going on these days?
A little bit of this, a little bit of that.
All right. And I know you're working with this Find a Dream charity set up there. Tell us a little bit about that, how you got involved with them.
I got involved with them through a buddy of mine, through Ray Mercer. Ray Mercer and I, we go back to before 1988, before the Olympics. And he was mentioning to me about Find a Dream, and he thought it would be a good idea if I come forward. And he talked to some of the guys. He talked to one of them.
Okay. Breaking up a little bit there. Can you tell us how you first get into fighting? It's weird. It's showing he's still connected. Now it just hung up. Everybody else on?
I'm here, Rich.
Okay,
so we're all three amigos are here. Four of the three stages.
Yeah, right. Skype is doing awesome tonight, so that's kind of weird to have someone else's in for once. But we'll try to get him back. There we go. Hopefully we got a clear connection this time. Drove under a bridge or something.
Please leave your message for 954632.
No messages. Not when they list out the number like that.
Yeah, right.
We don't want everybody calling Michael Moore.
Hello?
Hey, Michael. Got you back.
Yeah, rock, I'm back, Chief.
I don't know what happened there, but I was going to ask, I don't know if you heard the question, but how did you first get into fighting?
My grandfather, being a young age, I was always around him. Doing garden work, cutting grass, and so I had saw him leave at a certain time every day, and I would ask him if I can go with him, and he would always tell me no. And then finally, I got smart and I finished early one day, and I asked him could I go, and finally he said yes. So we went to the gym, and as we went to the gym, I saw some guys sparring in a ring, and I just walked over and started hitting the heavy bag. And he said he heard thumps, and as I said, the rest is history.
Michael, this is Tony on the line here, and the one fight from your career that I wanted to bring up, which is a very one of my favorite memories, I was 15 years old. This was back in 1992, and it was almost the end of my sophomore year in high school. And I remember turning to my dad saying, you know, Dad, I want you to take me to a fight in Atlantic City. And the fight that we decided to go to was your fight with Bert Cooper, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the 1992 fight of the year. And I was just rich before we got you on the air. I said, I'm a 15-year-old kid. I want to start boxing, but, you know, I hadn't really been – I went to a fight when I was a little kid because I didn't remember. And hello?
We lost him again.
We lost him again.
How's the mobile? Just story, Joe.
Who was it? It was a good one.
Oh, I'm not laughing. That was a good point.
Please leave your message for 954.
I'll give him an extra minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why his phone would like that. It's kind of weird.
That doesn't sound like it. That might be something from his line. Because none of us are getting disconnected.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely his end.
Hello.
All right. Third time's a charm.
Yes, there we go. We're good.
So Tony was talking about your Bert Cooper fight when we got cut off.
Yes.
Right. And like I said, for me, I'm a 15-year-old kid. I'm going to this fight, and the crowd was so electric. Obviously, Bert was, you know, he was more of a local guy. For a while, he was coming to my gym a few years later. So I got to talk to him a little bit about it. But if you could, I just wanted to get your recollections from that fight. It definitely was not a scientific fight. It was ball to the wall from the first 30 seconds.
Exactly. It was a brawl. But I remember when Bert and I, we weighed in and we did the face-off. And we looked each other in the eye. He started growling. And I was like, yeah, okay, so it's going to be a fight. And then I had, during the fight, I saw, when I was sitting on the ropes, I saw the punches better coming at me. And Bing was telling me, he was trying to stay in the middle of the ring. I didn't want to give him no leverage. I knew I had the reach on him, but I wanted to stay on the ropes because I can go in between the shots. And it worked out perfect for me because obviously I was a victor. And I was doing things that I thought I could do, and I was doing it right.
Funny story. I remember us talking about Bert Cooper on a past show, and I think it was Tony who brought up one of his friends knew him personally, and he said he saw him doing his road work and drinking a 40 at the same time.
It was a kid that I ended up boxing in the amateurs with, and he grew up in Sharon Hill, where Bert was from, right outside of West Philadelphia. He goes, all the talent in the world, the guy could punch it, you wouldn't believe, but I see him doing morning road work, and he's jogging with a 40.
Well, he was trying to get the road work in, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I remember back in 98, and this is obviously about 6-7 years after he fought you, and he was pretty much still fighting on, taking whatever he could get. And he had come down to my gym in South Philly. I was fighting amateur at the time, and he was down there sparring with another heavyweight that ended up fighting some of the same guys you did. A guy by the name of Gerald Nobles out of Philadelphia.
I remember the name. Yeah, I remember the name, but that's about it.
Going back to your career, obviously you moved up from light heavyweight, all knockouts in your light heavyweight division. Moved up to heavyweight, won the heavyweight championship of the world. Now, the one question that I'm having a debate with a friend of mine, he was saying the first fight he remembered seeing you fight was against Mike the Giant White, who was about 6'10". And in the first fight, you moved the distance. And I said, yeah, but if my memory serves me correct, I said, I think you knocked it down with like 10 seconds to go, and the bell saved
you. Yep, exactly. You can only be saved by a knockdown in the last round. And it was the last round, and I remember knocking him down, and he wouldn't have made it up for the 10 count. And that ended my knockout streak.
Yeah. I remember the fact, I think it was a right hook, and he went down face first.
I think it was, to be honest, I don't remember what punch it was. It might have been a right hook or a straight left hand. I remember the first one, and the first one was a straight left hand. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember watching that fight live on TV as it happened. So that's one of those fights that I was definitely, watching closely. And, I had followed you with your knockout streak. It was probably one of my biggest times as a boxing fan was growing growing up at that time. I used to get all the magazines and everything like that. Now I follow both boxing, so it's a little harder. But what was that like, putting that kind of streak together? Was there a lot of pressure to keep it going? And how was that like? How was it like to deal with a guy that had that much reach over you?
Well, it's about, you know, try to keep the streak going. You don't think of nothing like that. But people who know or know about the crunk workouts, it was a war every day. So anybody who was put in front of me during a regular fight, you know, I had to dispose of because of the hard training that I did down at crunk. Excuse me. But it was something, you know, boxing is not like it was back in the day when I, you know, like myself and a couple other fighters coming up. A lot of people think because you win a few fights and you have a name, you're ready to fight for a title. It's not like that anymore. You know, now they just go and fight and they don't put 100% into what they do, take care of their bodies. You know, they don't do that anymore. And it's sad to say.
Yeah, I was just saying, before we got on the air, that I'd be interested in hearing what you think about the lack of Americans in the heavyweight division. There's really no huge standouts, no champions from America. It's like dominated by Russia. How does that make you feel, being a guy that really was one of the people in the probably the best era ever for American heavyweight?
Well, it doesn't bother me. I'm out of boxing. You know, I'm a teacher. I train guys. That's about it. But, if I'm training someone, I'm going to dedicate 110% all the time, and I'm going to teach them what I was taught through some of the great trainers that I had. Emmanuel Stewart, you know, Freddie Roach, Teddy Atlas, Tony Ayala, you know, people like that, Georgie Benton and Lou Duva. You know, these guys taught me, they all taught me something different. And for guys who I train, I want to teach them just how I was taught. And to go out there, you got to be rugged. You got to go out there and you got to fight. Nothing's handed to you in boxing. You got to go out there and earn it, just like I did. I earned everything I did.
Michael, a friend of mine, I went to college with him. I posted the article on my Facebook page yesterday that we were going to be interviewing you tonight. And, he actually was a very talented collegiate wrestler. So he and I became friends in college. He came to some of my college boxing matches, and then I graduated shortly after that. He was also a big fight fan, so as soon as he saw that I was interviewing you, he reposted my article, and then his brother, who actually, it was funny because he was the first one, the fight that he brought up was also Mike the Giant White. But this gentleman, Kevin, Kevin wanted me to ask you your opinions on some of the trainers that you've had the opportunity to work with. He wanted to talk about Emmanuel Stewart from the Crunk days. He wanted to talk about Teddy Atlas, which I know there was some times of controversy because Teddy might get out there a little bit. He wanted to talk about Georgie Benton, a great guy out of Philadelphia. And then he also wanted to talk about Freddie Roach. And the floor is yours, sir.
Well, first of all, with Emmanuel Stewart. Emmanuel Stewart was my first professional trainer. And Emmanuel was like a father to me. There was things that I stayed at his house. I had a house right across the street from him, but I stayed there. I was like a son to him. Over the years, I think we just matured into being men, you know, especially and I'm sure I was hard to deal with back in those days. You know, I'm not going to take anything away from him. He did everything he was supposed to do, but he has taught me some things. Then you had Teddy Atlas. A lot of people don't know Teddy Atlas. Teddy Atlas is the type of person who cares about his fighter, who goes wholeheartedly, and it's not, he's looking for a paycheck. Teddy Atlas is looking to make you a champion. And he's done it with me. He's done it with a couple other fighters. And, you know, Freddie Roach. You know, Freddie Roach, these guys, people don't know. He's a Hall of Fame trainer, just like Emmanuel Stewart. you know, boxing test of the year. And it all comes down to what you're taught and how you listen and if you're able to come in the ring. Those guys, they are something, they feel different. We all have different styles, but we're probably the closest in this tour. And I would say most probably.
We got some breakage. Break it up.
Well, I was able to get most of that. That was actually very good. I just emailed my friend now, told him, you know, if he's not listening, check the archives. I know he's going to definitely want to hear about all that. And what was it like to be in camp with Freddie Roach when training Manny Pacquiao for some of his title fights?
Well, it was an experience. I was, you know, I wanted to go out there and be Freddie Roach's assistant. Being someone's assistant means if Freddie's not there, then you're assisting him to what they think the thing that he does. When Manuel was coming to me, when Freddie was out of town, I was the guy who took over the training for some of the guys. And I heard that I was too much on the guys or whatever it was, but I just think there's a lot of people out in California that probably didn't like my style because of the type of person I am or the type of person I was back then. But I just tried to bring the best out on everybody. And it wasn't trying to take over something and not to show that I'm better than this person. If I'm going to be your assistant, I'm going to be your assistant. If I'm going to be the head trainer, I'm going to be the head trainer. In that situation, Freddie gave me the opportunity to be his assistant, and I appreciate everything he did. Hopefully we'll work together again sometime.
Yeah,
we haven't met Freddie yet, but he's going to be in an event. We're probably going to see Freddie in a few weeks at the Marciana function, Rich, if you're able to go to that. They always do a lot of the 24/7 shows, you know, some of the bigger fights. Obviously, some of the Manny Pacquiao recent fights have been featured on there. And especially his last, you know, few fights, it looks like he is getting pulled in so many different directions. As a trainer in a gym, you know, trying to get him ready for a world title fight against a top quality. Excuse me?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Somebody just walked by. I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right. I was saying, you know, as they've been featuring a lot of Manny Pacquiao on the 24/7 shows on HBO for his last several fights, and they always make it seem that, you know, not that he's getting pulled in so many different directions. And I could see where, as a trainer, you know, getting a guy ready for obviously a top quality opposition, you know, that could be challenging. Is that something they embellish a little bit, or is it sometimes hard to keep him reined in?
Well, I think, you know, Freddie Roach has a good heart. Freddie, if someone wants him to do something, if he thinks it's worth doing, he's going to do it. And I'm sure he makes arrangements for someone to do something like that. But when you have a top-notch fighter like that, you're supposed to dedicate every day, all day to that fighter. That's my thinking. And when I was out there, there was you know, prior engagements that Freddie had to do. And, you know, coming back, knowing that the job was done right, that everything that he asked me to do, I made sure that it was done the right way.
Now, Michael, what would you say was, who was the toughest guy you ever fought?
The toughest guy I ever fought was all of them.
What was his name again?
All of them. Everybody.
Oh, okay. I thought that was
Why? Why? Because as a light heavyweight, winning the light heavyweight title, my ninth pro fight, and defending it, my fourth pro fight, and defending it nine times, everyone was gunning for me. And as a heavyweight, you know, I was an undefeated guy. Everyone was gunning for me. So everyone came with their A game. No one came being the slouch. So So I had to be ready for everybody, and everybody was tough. There's no one in particular. Most people say, wasn't Foreman because he knocked you out? No. He caught me at the right time, and that's a part of boxing that happens. You have a winner, you have a loser. Unfortunately, I lost that fight.
Oh, now, speaking of that fight, you know, that was one of those fights that I never expected George to win. I mean, I was following his comeback and just, you know, watched every second of every fight of his comeback. I never really was a big fan of his because he was before my time. But when he came back, you know, I think he was like that American big, lovable-looking guy. You know, everybody wanted to root for him. And, you know,
yeah.
In his age and trying to win a title. You know, what was that like being on the losing end of that? But obviously, you know, seeing that accomplishment and must have felt a little bit of, you know, that kind of a weird feeling. You know, you're happy for the guy, but disappointed in yourself a little bit, right?
You know, I understood that boxing, that's a part of boxing. You have to live with that. You know, if I'd have won, we'd have been selling Michael Moore girls to George Foreman girls.
I got my first girl at a company function back about 10 years ago, and they're pulling everybody random out, giving out gifts. They pull out, they're like, oh, next for a George Foreman grill. They pull my name out, and they're like, oh, wait, this has got to be fixed. So I got up, I did a little Ollie shuffle, I did a little shadow box, and everybody cheered, got my grill. But Michael, I wanted to ask you, obviously, you know, you had a long career, you had over 50-some professional fights, several world titles. If you could pick out one highlight of your career, what would you pick it out?
It would probably be fighting for my championships, you know, the Bert Cooper fight, the Holyfield fight, the Foreman fight, the Axel Schultz fight, and the Francois Botha fight, absolutely. All eyes were on me, and those were title fights, and, you know, some held and some I didn't, but I was very pleased with my performance.
And what would you say you enjoyed most about being involved in boxing?
You learn a lot. Like Teddy has taught me a lot. You know, he taught me a lot. And to this day, him and I, we still talk. You know, he still wants to change for the case. In the last couple
of... Lost. Yeah, speaking of Teddy Atlas, he's not on the phone anymore, but I could just kind of go back to my own interview with him, and you know, you had the feeling that the guy would just sit there and talk forever if you let him. Because he's just that patient. He's that good a guy, and you know, he's definitely knowledgeable about the sport. And he actually called me a bunch of times trying to make sure that interview went through. I just kind of came up to him at an event and handed him a business card, and he did more work than I did to make sure that interview had. I guess not too many people ask him for interviews unless it's, you know, ESPN on the latest boxing robbery or something.
I'll
see anybody, any place, any time, anywhere. All right, back again. We had it going good there for a little while there. But you were talking about Teddy Atlas?
Yeah, Teddy Atlas, he teaches you things where a lot of people can't really talk about, you know, nothing bad or anything like that. It's just that you have to experience it. It's a person who wholeheartedly cares about you and will take the shirt off his back to get to you. It's just that's the type of person he is. And I love that guy for that. He taught me a lot.
Yeah, I was just talking last week about how it was such a good thing to have him back on Friday Night Fights for the last episode there, because his metaphors were unbelievable. I mean, like, he was really, you know, given some good examples of, you know, how to explain boxing to somebody who never watched it before. And one of my favorites was how he was talking about Carlos Molina's attack on his opponent. And it was like the ocean moving a log, just swarming the guy with punches and just moving the log slowly, slowly to shore. And you know, that was a good picture. Plus, he was also talking about it's like the building superintendent with the ring of keys, you know. Molina's got all the keys, and he's opening a door right now.
Michael, did you feel that once you became champ, that your motivation was...
Tom decided to ask his first question, and we got nobody on the other end.
Yeah, I just really have a prospect. Unfortunately, because he's a very good interview, they're very patient in answering the questions very well. And just, unfortunately, tonight, I don't know if he's in a bad area or we're having our legendary technical issues.
Oh, wow. He just actually got kicked off the mainframe here. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, well, I can hear you fine.
Gotta double check sometimes. I'm not used to this good service. It was weird, like that time instead of giving me the option to redial, it just knocked him off the screen.
Please leave your message for 954-632-9955.
Oh, give it one more shot. Might be out of battery or something.
Please leave your message for
We may have, like I said, this connection issue tonight. Like I said, I know sometimes if I leave about a mile from my house, you will not get me. I was on the phone with a friend of mine yesterday. No problems at all. It's only got one little five. So, be in my room and lose spot from if I move 5 feet.
Please leave your message for 9546.
I will give
that
a couple minutes
to
try back.
What I think we should do is do like some of our you know, wrap up if we have anything upcoming. We got Ray Mercer again next week. Is that right?
We do Ray Mercer next week. We'll probably go back to MMA for 1 week after that. I don't know who we're going to get, but we'll get somebody. For sure.
When do we have Bobby Chen?
The 20th of September, I believe.
20th, okay. And
21st,
is that Thursday? No, 20th. Yeah, it'll be the 20th, because it's the 6th, the 13th, then the 20th. And I sent an email to the guy that you had gotten the original email from about the Marciano statue unveiling, the one that had told you everything was... you know, on schedule. I emailed him. I hadn't heard back yet. And I'm trying to find out a few things. You know, I know it's going to be at like 1 p.m. on Sunday, but I wanted to see what other events are going on that weekend. I know they're going to have a fight card. I don't know if they're doing anything on Saturday. But yeah, I want to find out more what's going on. And also, very important, I got to find a hotel in Brockton, preferably one that's pet friendly, because I might bring my dog Vinny with me. That'd be cool. And actually, I have a former coworker at Western, since I'm not there anymore, but she was the one that got Larry Holmes' business and his also his private residence where we were doing some pest control work for. And so she
often still meets with him, you know, to see how everything's going, if he needs anything. So I told her to send him a message that I'll see him up at Mid Rockin'. And Rich, let me, and Tom, I want to ask you this also. Let me just ask this to both of you guys. This is a matter of opinion right here. You know, back in the mid-'80s, there was a big controversy when Larry Holmes fell one victory shy of tying Rocky.
Sorry.
Oh, you're dialed.
Sorry.
Well, I do want to ask you a question.
We'll finish this if he answers.
Please leave your message for 954632.
Well, sorry, Tom. You don't get to
ask
the question.
Well,
maybe we'll send it to him by mail.
let me go back to ask both you guys this question with regards to the Marciano statue unveiling. as I was saying, back in the early 80s, Larry Holmes was one victory shy of tying Rocky's record of 49-0, lost a very close and controversial decision to Michael Spinks, and that's when he made the statement, "Rocky couldn't carry my jockstrap," obviously, which was said out of anger. And as being a competitive athlete, I know I've said a lot of things that I wish I hadn't said, and then as soon as you say it, it leaves your mouth, you're like, "Oh, I can't believe I just said that." Now, that haunted Larry for a lot of years, and I know he personally apologized to Rocky's younger brother, Peter, and, he's made multiple apologies to the Marciano family, but in a way, it's always hung over his head, and especially because of Larry's personality, he came right on the heels of Muhammad Ali, who at the time, later in his career, was a hero, and then Larry beat him up pretty bad, and so he had that against him. And then Larry always had more of a surly personality. But he wasn't like he was a surly monster like George Foreman was. He was more surly, but more of like an assassin type surly. And he never connected with the fans. And now there's always been that backlash against him because of the statement he made back in 1984, 85, I believe. Do you think it is wise for him to go to the statue unveiling? Matter of opinion.
I don't think enough people are still upset about it for him. Somebody might make a wisecrack at him.
I think it's done. I think it's buried. I think it's over with. But you always have this. Oh, I remember what you said type of thing, and it haunted him. So I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on that.
Yeah, I think that, well, first off, no one can argue the point that that statement was over the top. Just completely, totally classless and uncalled for. Having said that, it was in the heat of the moment. He has apologized, and I think showing up would be very appropriate. And, you're right. He always kind of, to me, he impressed me as the kind of person that just had a chip on his shoulder. That he seemed like he was his own worst enemy, in a sense. I mean, even after the Cooney fight, that when you'd think he'd be celebrating, it was like, well, I did it. I told you I'd do it. It's like, hey, dude, you won. And it just, you're right about not connecting with the fans. But I think that, that was a long time ago, and to Rich's point, a lot of people probably wouldn't even remember him saying that. Guys like us would, but I don't think it would be disrespectful at all, in my opinion.
It was funny, and I don't know if you were doing the show with us at the time. I did mention this on the air a few times, but in case you weren't, if you heard this one, cut me off, but back about 10 years ago, I used to have to go to some fights up in the Allentown area, about 45 minutes above where I live. They had a little Days Inn hotel up there. They had a little conference ballroom. The fights weren't anything great, but I sometimes would know guys on the card, guys that I trained with. And hey, it was a good night to go up there, pay $25, and sit ringside for some fights. And Larry was always the guest of honor because he only lived about 20, 30 minutes away in Easton. He would go there. He would sign a pair of gloves. You could raffle them off. And it was always a nice time. And they used to broadcast it on a little local Philadelphia station. And Larry would do the color commentary. Well, the one time he's there, his nephew was fighting. His nephew was like, I forget if it was his pro debut or if he was like 1-0 or something like that. Sculpted out of like a, you know, looked like a Greek god. I mean, sculpted out of granite. He's fighting this short, fat little guy with a gut hanging over a pair of his basketball shorts because he didn't have trunks. He had on high top, like Converse sneakers on. And Larry's kid comes out there and he's just slapping this guy a little bit. The guy's huffing and puffing after 20 seconds. And then he pulls out a haymaker and knocks Larry's nephew out cold with Larry doing the color commentary. And to see the look of shock on his face was kind of amusing. And then about a year later, I bring my neighbor up there, my neighbor's brother-in-law, about five of us went. And, you know, we're sitting at ringside and fight cards over. I didn't even have a digital camera then. I had, like, one of those disposable ones. But I brought it up to get some photos. And my neighbor's like, yeah, let's go get a picture of Larry Helms. Sure. So we go over there, my neighbor and his brother-in-law. Hey, can we get a picture, sir? Absolutely. So I snapped a photo, and I'm like, oh, can I get a photo? And he looks at me, he's like, okay, make it quick. I was like, okay, that was a little bit standoffish, but whatever. 2 days later, I developed the photos, and he's got a little bit of like a sneer on his face, and I realized I'm wearing a Rocky Marciano T-shirt in the picture.
Mm. Wow.
I'll have to send that to you. I got it scanned on there somewhere. But you got to see the look on his face. There's me with this stupid-looking grin on my face. And 2 days later, I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Tony, what year was this?
2002.
Oh, okay. Huh. So this was long after the fact, and it seems like there was that's interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's almost 20 years later.
Well, has Holmes said anything about being at the ceremony for the statue? Has Holmes said anything about that?
The only thing I saw was an article Richard sent me about a week ago, just highlighting some of the people that are going to be there. But I didn't see any quotes from anybody. I know Holyfield's going to be there. Because for years he was trained by Lou Duva, who we had on our air a couple years ago, and Lou was a lifelong friend. I think Lou was like a year younger than Rocky. Like Rocky was born 23, I think Lou was born like 24 or something like that. And even when Holyfield knocked out Douglas for the title, Lou got in the ring and they said, he pulled up to the heavens and said, this one's for you, Rock. So I think Holyfield's going kind of for Lou Duva. I know Freddie Roach is going to be there per the article, and it said Larry Holmes is going to be there, but I didn't see quotes from anybody else except that Holyfield going for Lou Duva.
Now, Tom, what question were you going to ask?
What I wanted to get on with him is his mental state after he became champ. Because, you know, there's an old cliche about, I believe it was a Marvin Hagler quote about it's hard to get up in the morning to run, do your road work when you're sleeping in silk pajamas. And I remember back in the 80s there was a, like a top 20 heavyweight, Eddie the Animal Lopez, a very colorful guy. And I ran into him once in the Main Street Gym out in L.A., and we were talking about Cooney, because this is after the Holmes fight, and Cooney just kind of went into, he was AWOL for, I believe, a couple of years. I think, if I remember right, the Holmes fight was June of 82, and Cooney was missing in action until December of 84. And this was probably spring of 84, and I was talking to Lopez about it, and he made that same comment that, you know, when you really get to a certain level, it's hard to keep the motivation. So my question to Michael was going to be, did you find it, you know, because all your life you strive, I mean, I could imagine with the success he had, he probably had his goal on being the champ from an early age. And you work and strive and claw your way up. And then when you get to the top of the mountain, it could be human nature to have a little bit of a letdown. But then again, maybe he's seen it different and was even more motivated to hang on to what he had. So, you know, who knows?
Well, I'll figure out the way to word that and get it to him in an email. Maybe next week we'll hear the answer.
Yeah.
We're running low on time here. We've got about 5 minutes. I did have one more quick story to share, and also wanted to bring up the fantasy football point. I know I was supposed to set something up between the two shows here, between last week and this week, but I got swamped with stuff and didn't end up doing anything except lumberjacking and posting articles. So I will put something up on the blog between now and the first game of the season, though, so we'll be in touch by email if you guys want to join in. And my one story I wanted to mention goes all the way back to when we were a MySpace page and the whole Zions case got started. There was a guy that I wrote about by the name of Russell Pike. And just the other day, he got his sentence from the tax man. The IRS sentenced him to 52 months in jail.
Ouch. Ow.
And I got sued for saying the guy was a scam artist. But 52 months in jail, he's going to appeal.
Who hasn't sued you when you were doing that MySpace page?
What?
Who hasn't sued you when you were doing that MySpace page?
Just science. Nobody else. I actually wasn't anything related to Fight News, but I did get involved in another case where I got sued, but it was nothing related to fighting at all. The plastic surgery thing that I was working on. You know, it's like I get these things that I want to put my time into, and then somebody just decides to sue me over it. You know, it's like they don't want me to write about it. So they assume. Anyway, Russell Pike, I don't know when he's mandatory supposed to report for that sentence or what's going on, whether he can stay out on appeal. But,
you know,
that's months,
very unusual to hear of a sentence that long, because a lot of times, if it goes, I mean, most of the time it won't even go criminal if you try to settle with them. So this had to be really above and beyond the call here. This is interesting.
They said he owed $1.2 million. He's still got to pay that. That's his bill.
Yeah.
So he's going to get his 10 cents an hour from the laundry and making license plates.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's it for us. Adios. Till next week. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys.
Well,
for a good show.
Kevin and James, I want to thank you guys for listening tonight. Come back next week. We're going to have Merciless Ray Mercer on, and we'll take it from there.
Enjoy the fight,
guys.
All right,
guys. Thanks a lot.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Good show.